Hello, welcome to Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday night. We did a podcast this morning at 9 a.m. and we talked on the front of the podcast about how this is a bit of a risk because I was going to play golf today. I'm out of town and I'm actually at a friend's house out of state, and I'm sitting in front of 50 bottles of bourbon, and people are wondering, why the heck are you sitting in front of so much liquor? And that was a joke at 9 a.m. this morning. And I said, well, this is probably a bit of a risk doing a podcast in the morning and not posting for 24 hours. So just excuse us if anything happened. Well, stuff happened today. It was one of the unfortunate newsiest days the NBA has had in recent memory that wasn't a transaction day. There were no transactions. And yet it was one of the busiest news days. So we're re-recording it. It's Thursday evening. Joining me from New York City, Bontemps.
Nothing happening here today, fellas. Nothing at all.
Dallas, Texas, Van McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Wendy might want to swipe one of those bottles of bourbon and maybe send it to Adam Silver. I'm sure he could use a sip or two right now.
Well, actually, Adam Silver needs to be sober right now because I think he's been present enough, in my opinion, really for the last few months. I don't think we need to go through the whole recap of what happened with Kyrie Irving. He's now suspended. I wonder if he's played his last game for the Nets, because in a strange way, and I don't want to compare anti-Semitic feelings to something that is sort of laughable, like the flatness or lack of flatness of the earth. But when Kyrie was going over the flat earth stuff, he kept doing interviews about it, progressive interviews. You know, he sort of like joked about it on a podcast, and they talked about it in a press conference. And then I think he sat with like a science writer from New York Times, and the science writer kind of, beat his own head against the wall, trying to get Kyrie to come off the position that the earth wasn't flat. And Kyrie just couldn't do it. He just, I remember reading the story in the New York Times, and it was almost like, I don't even think he really believes it. He just can't succumb. He can't come off his position. He can't show weakness. He can't lose faith. And I remember thinking it was a ridiculous position, because one of the things you learn as an adult, quite frankly, is that you have to be able to come to terms when you've made a mistake. If you don't, you're gonna be stuck in the mistakes. In fact, one of the things that you learn when you're a leader of things is sometimes when you make a mistake or you've done something wrong or you're doing something wrong, that you've got to fix it right away. And so when I saw Kyrie give the interview that he gave Thursday afternoon, where he just absolutely wouldn't say what needed and was not only from a human point, but from a business standpoint, he just wouldn't say what needed to be said. It reminded me of the position he took with the flat earth. And so now that he's tripled, quadrupled down, and not only did all that, but did it in such a way that he's sort of rallying. He said the other day, I've got an army all around me. Mm-hmm. Well, now I think he's worried about alienating that army. I don't know if it's within him to back down here, even though we're talking about something so much more serious. So McMahon, you wonder what you said on Twitter, what I had been thinking since the next statement, which is that I don't know if he's in position. He's already demonstrated that for a belief, he's willing to lose games and lose money.
And he has shown that he refuses to acknowledge wrong. He refuses to apologize. He refuses to, say, I am not anti-Semitic. And that was after days of the Nets, of the league office, of, I'm sure, other people, them trying to get the Anti-Defamation League involved, and the ADL's involved. Apparently Kyrie wouldn't sit down, but he won't listen to reason. He won't, as you said, back down. And just based on what that statement says, there's a couple of key phrases here, both in the third paragraph, in my opinion. One, we are of the view that he is currently unfit to be associated with the Brooklyn Nets. Okay. Currently unfit. And essentially they're saying, until we feel like he is fit to be associated with the Nets, he will not play for them. Okay. So how does that happen? Kyrie will serve a suspension without pay, quote, until he satisfies a series of objective remedial measures that address the harmful impact of his conduct. As they say, it'll be at least 5 games. What makes you believe that Kyrie will satisfy a series of, quote, objective remedial measures? He's not backing down. I think the only realistic way that he plays for the Nets is if they cave again. And I don't see a world.
When you say cave again, you're referring to last year.
Right, last year, and it's different issues, but it is another case of them trying to reason with Kyrie, trying to, you know, convince him, trying to, you know, lay facts out for him. And it was him refusing to get vaccinated last year. And they said, hey, but, you know, obviously we remember at the time that meant you couldn't play in New York City for the home team. And they said, if you can't play at home, you can't play on the road. And then they ended up caving on that. I don't think they're going to cave on this. You know, we'll see. That's up to them to hold up to their own word. But I would be shocked if Kyrie budges, because as you said, this is about him being stubborn. And look, I'm not, you know, I don't have any advanced degrees in psychology. I did get a C in the course at a community college, though. I don't think he's mentally well. You know, he's the NBA's version of Kanye. He goes down these conspiracy theory rabbit holes. And again, what he says, we're wasting our time analyzing what he says, because it really is gibberish. And if you wait, you know, 20 seconds, he's going to contradict himself probably. But the simple fact is, he's not apologetic. You know, he refuses to back away from this. And as long as that happens, I just can't see him back in a Brooklyn uniform.
I mean, listen, I have so many things to say. Let's go back to Tuesday when I asked Sean Marks about why they decided to have Kyrie Irving keep playing while they were, quote, working on the next steps with the Anti-Defamation League. You guys remember what he said? Kyrie Irving, they did not want him to, quote, interact with people. Gee, I wonder why they didn't want Kyrie Irving to interact with people. Maybe
they were
worried
about creating a fuss.
Yeah, maybe they were afraid he would say, I'm not going to answer a question about whether I'm anti-Semitic or not, which he did
yes
to our colleague
no
Nick Friedel. Nick, I mean, again, our colleague Nick Friedel, people would like to have a yes or no answer to, are you anti-Semitic or do you have anti-Semitic beliefs? He refused to answer the question. Like, I understand what you guys are talking about what Kyrie might do or might not do. This has been an absolute embarrassment by everybody involved, by the NBA, by the NBPA, by the Nets from the beginning. The only time anybody has said that this guy did anything wrong was after he refused to say whether or not he is anti-Semitic. Let's just think about that. Adam Silver, 20 minutes before this guy talked this morning, put out a statement a week after this happened. He finally emerged to say something. What did he say? That Kyrie Irving was, quote, reckless in what he did. Not wrong, not mistaken, not that he shouldn't have done it. He was reckless. I mean, give me a break. And then in the same statement, he says, I'm going to meet with him sometime in the next week. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? In the next week? I mean, come on. It's a 35-minute drive from Olympic Tower to Sunset Park where the Nets were practicing, which was happening while the statement was being put out. He couldn't be there this morning to talk to Kyrie Irving. He couldn't have talked to the press at practice after Kyrie Irving. He couldn't have been present for any of this. I mean, come on. It's just an embarrassing lack of leadership on all fronts, on the Nets front, on the NBA's front. I'm going to say it again, on the NBPA's front, like to say absolutely nothing about this, to not say this guy's name yet.
And he's still he's a vice president.
A vice president of the
association.
And like, they've said nothing.
Whoa.
It's embarrassing. And for the Nets to now come out and say, this guy is unfit to be associated with this team after their GM said 2 days ago he couldn't interact with people, after they put out a statement, a written statement on Wednesday night that did not include the words, "I am sorry," that said in it, "I don't agree with everything that was in this film." So what do you agree with that's in the film? Let's hear that.
I know. I don't think we're going to get anywhere.
Well, again, I know that, but I'm just saying, but I'm saying that to me, like just for this guy to then to come back and say stuff later, that's fine. I think that's a secondary story. To me, this is a failure in leadership from the NBA, from the top down. And I'm sure you guys have had the same thing. I've had so many people in the league reach out to me the past few days and are just outraged at how this has been handled and the way this has made the league look and the way it's made everybody in the league look. And it's just, to me, it's embarrassing that it took all the way to this point for anybody to say that what this guy did was wrong, for anybody to say that something needed to be done. It's just ridiculous that we're sitting here at this point having that part of the conversation.
The reason it got here was because of the way the Nets handled Kyrie over the last 3 years.
Right. Of course.
And I know that I want to be very clear. I'm not comparing an anti-Semitic rhetoric or messaging or promotion, however you want to call it, against him walking away from the team 2 years ago to go to a birthday party. But he never really felt, you know, he's only been emboldened by all of it. I mean,
he's never been held to account. He's never been held to account hardly for anything.
I think he believes he won on the anti-vax front. He believes he won.
I mean, I can understand. That's one where the facts actually align with what he believes, which is pretty unusual.
There were problems with the rule. There were some hypocrisies within the rule. It was obviously problematic, and it's why they ended up getting rid of it. But he believes he won on that. And the Nets ultimately bent the knee to him.
Right. That's why I'm saying the facts align, because they backed down.
Right. They said they weren't going to bring him back unless he could play in 100% of the games. And then 6 weeks later, they changed their mind.
Right. Now, I thought Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
No, but hold on. Why would his calculus in his head, as he's thinking about the risk reward of this, he went through something like this a year ago and he ended up winning. Now, it cost him $17 million. It cost the team a lot, but I don't think that's a huge issue for him. I think it's more important for him to be the perceived winner in his mind. And I think he probably thought he might even still at this moment think he's going to win this one.
I mean, look, Brian, the team put out a statement, a joint statement with him and the ADL and the Nets last night, Wednesday night, when everybody approved a statement that came out where he didn't admit he did anything wrong.
He didn't even meet with the ADL.
That's what I mean. Like, at no point here has he admitted he did anything wrong. And why? And to your point, why should he have expected anybody to call him out on it? Because no one has. The NBA didn't. The union didn't. The Nets didn't. Nobody did.
Certainly, nobody in his inner circle.
Okay, McMahon, you were saying something about Kareem.
Kareem, I thought on his Substack summed this up pretty well. And obviously, all-time NBA legend who, throughout his career, was involved in social justice issues when it was something that was certainly not as common as it is today, and certainly not as well received. Kareem wrote, "Honestly, there's little hope that he will change because he's insulated by fame and money and surrounded by yes people. There's no motivation to learn how to distinguish propaganda from facts. All that's left is for the world to decide how it should respond to him." And when the world deciding how it responds to him starts with the Nets, and the Nets finally have said, enough is enough. You're unfit to be associated with this franchise. You have to do these things to get back on the floor. And if they stick with it, we've seen the last of Kyrie Irving in a Nets uniform. I think that's not exactly a thin limb to go out on.
I mean, look, man, we're in the league right now, okay, where guys are punching guys in the face and like nothing's happening. Guys are, you know, doing what Kyrie did, and it took a week and like him to triple down on it for something to happen.
And let's remember, nothing happened until he said he would refuse to say whether or not he was anti-Semitic. And before that, the league and Adam Silver both put out statements where they didn't say anything wrong.
And by the way, the league stood by as he didn't talk for 3 days to delay because people wanted to ask these questions.
Where the Nets literally said, we don't want him to make more of a fuss or interact with more people.
So they were giving him comfort, quite frankly.
Everybody kept talking about how there needed to be understanding, how there needed to be space, how people needed to come together.
I mean,
it was incredible.
There's little fires everywhere, big fires everywhere. Where's the fire chief? Adam Silver has been completely absent. I reserve the right to use that in a story because I think I might have to write something. He's just been absent. Earlier this week, I can't believe we're having to do two emergency pods about this week. You know, we did a really good pod earlier today looking at how the Bucks got to 7-0 and their defensive changes and issues going on with the Minnesota Timberwolves. And it was good stuff. And that's what I want to do. The reason I say at the start of the podcast, we talk about the NBA is because I really want to talk about the basketball. Mm-hmm. And earlier this week on Monday, I recorded another pod with Kurt Goldsberry and Mark Spears. And I said, I want to focus on the positivity in the NBA. I want to start off with the teams that are overachieving because I really don't want to have to do this. I want to be able to focus on the good things that are happening. I want to be able to focus on the Orlando Magic, who had a really good win over the Warriors at home tonight.
Heck, we spent the first 2 weeks of the season talking about how excited we all were about everything that was going on. It's been on the court. It's been an awesome first 2 weeks on the court.
And if you're a casual NBA fan, and you go to ESPN right now, the first four stories are Kyrie Irving, Miles Bridges pleading no contest to domestic violence today, whatever that plea bargain was, Josh Primo from the San Antonio Spurs being sued by a former team psychologist for exposing
Josh Primo and the San Antonio Spurs being sued.
The Spurs put out a combative statement today, just like Draymond Green was combative, just like Robert Sarver was combative.
Just like Kyrie Irving was combative.
It's just like, again, Adam Silver. He's like, yeah, we investigated Robert Sarver and we suspended him for a year and we think we did a good job. I mean, he had to be browbeaten over the head with that until Sarver ended it. It wasn't even Silver. Sarver ended it. And
let's be honest, the pressure from players and the financial consequences from sponsors ended it. That's what it ended.
Yeah.
Where's the pressure from players on this Kyrie situation? There's silence around the league.
It's not just players. I mean, like Steve Kerr before the game tonight, Steve Kerr is not afraid to speak on social issues. He's done it over and over and over. Steve Kerr, basically, I don't have the quote directly in front of me, but he basically said, I'm going to take a pass on that.
Well, and then he addressed it without, it was very much like the MBPA statement from earlier in the week and the NBA statement. He addressed the kind of general subject without speaking directly about Kyrie.
Without saying Kyrie Irving did something wrong.
Yes.
It's a pretty low bar to just say Kyrie Irving did something wrong. And it took him literally saying, I refusing to answer a question as to whether he's anti-Semitic for that to be said. It's just staggering.
I don't want to parse everything, but like the net statement, we were dismayed today when given an opportunity at a media session that Kyrie refused to unequivocally say he has no anti-Semitic beliefs. We were dismayed today.
Right.
Today is 7 days on, buddies. And so I'm saying,
do we think that in private, do we think the Nets were stunned by what Kyrie Irving said today? A guy that
they were trying to avoid the fuss for 3 days.
Of course. A guy who said when he was asked, did you meet with the ADL? He said, I heard they wanted to meet with me and we handled it. We handled it was what he said.
I mean, the $500,000 that he was essentially forced to donate to the ADL basically said tonight, we don't want his money. Like
they're probably going to raise more than $500,000 by people who see that message. Quite frankly,
Hey, I will say this. You said we did a really good pod today, and I think that's true for the most part, but Bontemps did have maybe the worst trivia question of all time.
I have a new trivia question.
It's going to be lost to history.
I know. It is going to be lost to history. Though it's going to come up.
McMahon got mad at me because he said something, and I said I was trying to protect him from himself. What did I say that pissed you off?
Oh, you were trying to protect Cat because I was going.
Right, we're off to say what it is. I said
I thought Cat was no. Not
I'm not asking what you said. I was asking what I said.
Then you said you wanted to protect me because apparently, like, I have to be fearful of stepping out on the limb of a guy who's never won anything.
Well, you know what?
In the spotlight,
listen, the NBA, we're afraid of stepping out on limbs this week in the NBA, apparently. So it's an understandable concern on Brian's part.
You know what? McMahon's not afraid to say stuff. Bontemps isn't afraid. Bontemps wasn't afraid to ask the question to Sean Marks this week. Nick Friedell, our Nick Friedell. I don't mean to like be talking about our people, but he showed 0% fear.
Well, and Kyrie's whole thing of like Friedell was trying to get famous off of this. Like, first of all, dude, all he was doing was asking very simple, direct, fair questions.
He apparently was asking questions that the league and the team weren't asking.
As I've said repeatedly this week, Nick Friedell has held Kyrie Irving to account 100 times more than anybody else in the situation. The Nets, the league, the PA, anyone. Nick Friedell's the only one who's asked him the questions that everybody wanted to know. The only one.
And he's talking about you're looking for another Instagram clip. Look, dude, you're the one who sat up there and, you know, did the whole we're going to be best friends thing. Friedell didn't send you an invite to his birthday party. So give me a break. By the way, if Friedell sent me an invite to his birthday party, I would decline it.
All right, so we talked about other news in the NBA. The Josh Primo situation is very unfortunate. We'll be talking maybe more about that later. Miles Bridges, it's going to more of that. We'll talk about that later.
There is a statement Hornets just put out, if you'd like me to read it.
It basically says we're aware, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Yeah, I was just going to say it's a boilerplate statement.
He doesn't play for the Hornets right now. He's a free agent.
And Adam Silver needs to address that with the suspension.
Is this going
to
be like
his plate?
Jerry Tarkanian said about where, you know, the NCAA was so mad at Kentucky they gave Cleveland State a bigger punishment.
Speaking of that, it was not lost on many people in the league today, and was truly incredible that in the wake of this Kyrie Irving press conference and all these things going down, the NBA handed out two fines today. You know what they handed them out to? The Clippers and the Thunder for mislabeling injured players.
Yeah, the Clippers got fined for playing two-way guys that they said were assigned to the G League.
That's right.
Come on, dude.
While this was happening, immediately after Kyrie Irving's suspension, two fines emails come out about, you know, Musa Diabate playing as a two-way player in an NBA game. Like,
yeah, and the other one, the definition like Josh of Giddey's returns. Who cares?
Just completely. Completely bonkers.
Mark Dagenau. I don't know if Mark Dagenau has ever been mentioned on this pod.
When he was hired, I mentioned that when I Googled him, the first thing that popped up was his LinkedIn profile. It's no longer the case. Although he does say he can go to the grocery store without being recognized most of the time.
He's also a good coach, I think, too.
He's a good defensive coach, and I like him. I've talked to him a little bit. But his response to that fine, by the way, was like, well, I guess I can't. I'll have to be less transparent.
Yes, the Thunder, known for their transparency on every front.
You have to be less transparent.
Open books.
If I was sitting there, I'd have said, hey, nobody's ever been fined for telling the media what their starting lineup's going to be. He's now refusing to release a starting lineup until whatever it is, 30 minutes before tip.
I needed a laugh about something. That was good.
I do like him though, and I think
he's a very good coach.
I think that he's a very good arrows coach. Pointed up for the OKC, formerly known as Tanker.
So
as long as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's playing, they're going to be in good shape.
Yes, they're probably going to lose tonight to the Nuggets.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play, and boom. Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
Very bad news for the Philadelphia 76ers today. James Harden out at least a month with a foot tendon injury. How about this for hard-hitting analysis? I don't like foot tendon injuries.
Well, and especially a guy who admittedly had pretty major conditioning concerns last year when he wasn't able to train due to the hamstring strain. I mean, you know, it's not just a month that he misses. It's then, you know, how long or does he get back in the kind of shape and the kind of form that he was in to start the season when he, you know, I'm not sitting here telling you he was prime James Harden, but
he was good,
better than last year. And he was at least able to do some things off the dribble, create some separation off the dribble that you certainly didn't see last year. I don't know if we see it again the rest of this year. It's going to be tough. It's not like you can do an awful lot when you're recovering from that kind of a foot injury.
No, for sure. I mean, look, I was wrote up something for us for the morning on kind of what the Sixers go do from here over the next month without him. And over the eight seasons he was in Houston, the eight full seasons, he missed a combined 29 games. Mm-hmm. He's missed 45 games the past 2 years, and that's before the 12 or 15 or whatever he's going to miss now. Like, this is, you know, he's eighth in active minutes played. This is clearly going to be something that's going to happen with him going forward. Now he's just going to start to wear down, as we've seen with all these guys, LeBron and everybody else. And to your point, McMahon, like, he did come in good condition. He worked out all summer, as he made sure everybody knew, and he was playing well. But now we got to see what happens when he comes back. And, oh, by the way, like, look, I was just looking this up too. Tyrese Maxey has been off to a nice start. He's shooting 24%. He's scoring 24 points a game. He's shooting a ton of great percentages from the field. When he's on the court, Philadelphia's defense is 115 points per 100 possessions. When he's off, it's 105. So this team, say what you want about James Harden, if this team is going to be the team they want it to be, they've got to figure out things on the defensive end where they currently sit 23rd. Like, that ain't going to be good.
Well, also, Embiid is, you know, he's not right. They've sat him down a few times, which, I mean,
yeah, you want to talk about conditioning coming off a foot injury, the mysterious offseason plantar fasciitis that led to him not being in shape. Harden's eighth in active in minutes on the court among active players. Where do you think he is in minutes in the club among active players?
I would probably first with a exclamation point. I was going to say asterisk, but no, first an exclamation point.
An ass what? I mean, for sure.
Yeah. No.
Clubs in Houston.
He dedicates himself to something. It's it's important. The Sixers are, you know, one of the teams that it's been kind of hard to read them. They got off to a real sluggish start, then they played better. Now they're back under 500, and now they've got injury problems.
They're also heading into a stretch in their schedule where they play Atlanta twice. They play the Suns. They play the Knicks on Friday. They play the Bucks and Wolves on a back-to-back next weekend. Like, a couple weeks, I should say. Like, they got a pretty tough schedule the next couple weeks, and if they don't get right quick, you know, all of a sudden they could be a few games under 500. And this year's Eastern Conference, like, it ain't going to be easy to make up games
That's
like
true.
That. You know, like, you've got to be on top of your game all the time, or you're going to get in a hole fast.
Speaking of getting in a hole, before we go,
I got a trivia question.
Oh, by the way, the answer to the trivia question.
Speaking of getting in a hole.
Well, yeah, hold on.
Give you the
hold
answer. On. And this is just indicates how bad the question was. The answer was the 1956-57 Golden State. Well, actually, not even Philadelphia.
Like Philadelphia Warriors. That's right.
We give the answer first before the question.
Listen, it filled my purpose at the time. But isn't it
Jeopardy where you give the answer, then you ask the question? So the answer was 1956-1957. Philadelphia Warriors. The question is, what's the worst trivia question ever asked on this podcast?
There you go. Well, listen, we got one here.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
Now it's time for a Hoop Collective Trivia.
Who has the worst plus minus, total plus minus in the NBA? Right now,
I just cheat. It's Jalen Green. I just looked this up. Unless one of the Warriors slipped
underneath. No, it is Jalen Green. And the reason I asked the question is because the guy who's second is Jordan Poole. And yeah, that pretty much sums up why the Warriors are 3-6 right now.
Well, and why is Jordan Poole so bad? He's not played great, and he's played a lot of time with that second unit. And you know,
Jordan Poole's been flat out bad.
He's had some real stinkers tonight included. The reason that I looked it up is for a while, it's funny. Actually, I looked it up, I don't know, a little over a week ago, and Kevin Durant was dead last. But I was looking it up then, and I did the same tonight to see where James Wiseman was. He doesn't play enough minutes to be at the very bottom, but man.
You know, well, listen, Wiseman
minus nine in 10 minutes.
Yeah, James Wiseman is minus 66 on the season in 121 minutes. Jordan Poole is minus 85 in twice as many minutes.
Yeah,
great. You guys know I really like Wiseman's skill set.
Yeah,
and I've sort of been like, you know, defending him and believing in him for the last 2+ years, but his on court resume is poor.
Well, and the thing about it is, like, when you watch him play, he's going to do a couple things where you're like, man, you know, did you see that finish? Wow, did you see him catch that lob or block that shot? Or dang, look at that big guy run the court. Like, his talent does still pop. And you look at his counting stats, like, okay, the guy's playing a little less than 14 minutes a game, averaging 7.5 points, shooting 60% from the floor, you know, grabbing. He's grabbing almost 4 rebounds a game. So better than, you know, better. I mean, like his numbers per 36 and all that, they look, but they just bleed points with him. He clogs things up offensively. He gets lost defensively. You know, so
well,
what a day
anyway,
where...
your point is well taken. They lost on Thursday night in Orlando. They've had a miserable 4-game Eastern trip. They're 0-4 on it. They,
0-5 on the road this season.
And that 0-4, you're losing to Detroit. You're losing to Charlotte. You're losing to Orlando. I mean, you ain't playing 2 against Milwaukee and 2 against Boston here.
And you're also not injured. That to me is the concerning part. It's these, they're not missing 5 guys and like limping around.
But yeah, they're mad.
He's done anyway. Right, like, right. If he's playing, it's a problem. I mean, Dante DiVincenzo's been out. He would have to bench some. But
right.
But I mean, come on. Like, that's not.
Well,
that's not
and their starters, you know, Clay actually had one of his better games tonight. But they're starting five. You look at their, you know, net rating and all this sort of thing. Their starting five has been playing.
Their starting five came into tonight. I don't think this is updated properly. They're plus 27 per 100 possessions. I should be clarifying.
Yeah, I mean,
plus 27 points per 100 possessions.
Dominating.
They have been dominant.
Steph has been really good. Steph's averaging 31-7-7-7. Like,
yep.
He's shooting.
Steph had 39 points on 22 shots tonight, and they lost to the freaking Orlando Magic. That's a problem.
Listen, Lakers are 2-5. The Warriors are 3-6. Lakers beat the Jazz tomorrow night. Guess who's looking at whom in the schedule? I've been understanding.
It's tough to beat those Jazzies, though, boy. I tell you what. So, you know, we've talked, like, going into the season about, hey, you've got to invest in the development of James Wiseman. And by the way, Kuminga, was he DMPCD again tonight? He has been a lot. So they've kind of pulled the plug already on him. I think it's getting to the point where they're gonna have to consider pulling the plug on Wiseman being a rotation player. They're already cutting his minutes.
Well,
and here's the thing.
Quote from Steve Kerr tonight.
I'm saying send him to the G League. That's where he needs to be.
I'd like to hear this quote. I haven't seen it. What did he say?
Let me. Go ahead, McMahon.
Go ahead.
He said the bench unit is going to be changed.
Yeah.
I don't exact quote. He said the bench unit is going to be changed.
And I understand, look, he's a number two overall pick. There is talent there. And man, to send a number two overall pick to the G League in his third year, although that there is an asterisk. That's
well, the guy hasn't played basketball in
right,
three and
that's
a half
my point.
Years.
There should be no shame in him going to the G League, getting minutes, making mistakes that aren't going to be under the microscope of you're making mistakes that are costing the defending champion Dynasty Warriors games. You know, Kuminga, if Kuminga's not playing for the Warriors, let him go play in the G League. These are young guys who are raw with talent, and they clearly are not ready to contribute to a team that has not just championship aspirations, but is trying to defend a championship. It's unfortunate when you're that high of a pick, number two and number seven. You know, that's the reality of the situation, but it is, and it doesn't mean they can't develop into quality NBA players. But you know, if they were on the Orlando Magic, fine, let them make those mistakes there. The fact they're on the Warriors right now, and, you know, it gets late early in the Western Conference too, man.
Sure does.
You don't want to dig out of a hole in the West, because what you'll be doing, you might be trying to play your way into the playoffs from the play-in scenario.
Well, look, and you look at last year's team, right? They had Otto Porter Jr., who had a nice year for them. They had Gary Payton II, who's a terrific defensive player. They frankly weren't playing Wiseman, right? Like, he just wasn't, he was hurt. He was not around. And they were an elite defensive team, and that carried them through the season. After tonight's game, they are 26th in the league in defense. They got a -4 net rating. And we're, and like you said, McMahon, they haven't played a murderer's row schedule. They are pretty healthy. Like, to me, there's a lot of flashing lights with this team, because there's no, like, Steve Kerr could say they're going to change the bench rotation or change the bench lineups, but there ain't a lot of changes to make, really. There's not other options to really go to.
Here's the quote. We've had a look at a few different combos, as in meaning bench rotation.
Right.
It's time to get a look at a few more. And then there's this on Wiseman. It's been a tough games for James, but I'm a believer of his talent, his attitude, but there's no shortcuts. So make of that what you will.
Yeah, I mean, what you make of it is that their bench has been an absolute abject disaster, and they have to do something about it because they're dropping games. And
it's
like
November 3rd, though, they're the Warriors. They played long and had to go to Japan. And
well, the thing that gives you confidence if you're them is that their starting five has been awesome with Clay not hitting shots, and tonight he started to hit shots and whether Clay is obviously not going to be the same player as he himself has said from over the injuries, but he's still a decent defender, or to a good defender, if not like the elite all world guy he was before.
Right.
And he's going to hit threes. Like, this is not the first time Clay's had a slow start to the year. He's going to knock down threes in a big way, like he did tonight. He went 7-for-15 from three, had a ton of points. Like, he's going to be fine. Their starting lineup has been really good, but they don't have a lot of tools to fix this bench unless they go out and potentially start thinking about moving some of these young guys, which maybe they do.
That's interesting.
Because they bet on these young guys this year. They were like, we're going to let Otto go. We're going to let Gary Payton go. We'll sign DiVincenzo to a 1-year deal. But this is like, Kuminga's got to play. Moody's got to play. Wiseman's got to play. And look, Jordan Poole also, Franco, just has to be better. They gave this guy a massive extension. He's shooting 31% from three. He's turning the ball over like crazy. Like, he's got to be better for them.
Awfully tough time to sell the young guys. You ain't exactly selling high.
I'm about to deliver a hot take. I think the Warriors are going to be fine. How about
take a chug of some bourbon and let it rip?
Yeah.
They probably will be, but it'll be interesting to monitor that for sure.
Well, and they might be fine with their starters playing 39 minutes a game, which is not ideal.
Right. That was not the plan.
All right. Well, I no more emergency pods for a few days. I want to focus on some good basketball stuff, please.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Before I go, I just want to say, I know that not everything that David Stern did was appreciated. I know that his style, for a myriad of reasons, wouldn't necessarily work in today's NBA. But it might be time to go dust off the Stern playbook if you're Adam Silver and consider starting to show a little leadership.
I thought you were going to say a little backbone, but...
Well, you never had to worry about... He never had to worry about David Stern's backbone. And, you know, David Stern not being around anymore as a advisor, official or unofficial, to Adam Silver, may be playing a role in how this happened too. Because it wouldn't have taken 7 days.
Well, look, back in 2001, Charlie Ward said some, I would say, pretty unfortunate things about the Jewish community, which he later apologized for. And David Stern did not fine Charlie Ward back then or punish him like officially. He did, however, in part say this: Ward would have been better off not to have uttered his uninformed and ill-founded statements, but I do not wish to enhance his sense of martyrdom by penalizing him for giving them public voice. He will have to accept the reactions and judgments of fans and all fair-minded people who have been offended. That is a more full-throated indictment of something than anything we heard over the past week, which is all a bunch of mealy-mouthed. Yeah, you know,
Ward did apologize,
just like Myers Leonard apologized last year when there was a full-throated statement from Adam Silver condemning him, among other things.
I mean, Miles, I don't want to compare Myers Leonard to Kyrie Irving, but the statement
Myers that Leonard, Myers Leonard, who also instantly almost apologized and began doing words things
were,
about it.
The first words of his statement were, okay, thank you, listen to Hoop Collective Podcast. I wish we'd had more fun. Try to have a good weekend. Thank you to Tim. Thank you to Tim. Thank you to Jackson, who's had to work double shift. And thank you to Nate, who joined us on the producing side tonight. We will talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.